Started. It's a small room, small audience, but I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm sure I will. Last session of the day, last session of Tech Days, actually, so let's make it count. So I want to talk to you about the Microsoft Design Language. And my name is Laurent Bugnon. I work for Identity Mine, and as a firm, we do a lot of metro design. We'll talk about the name in just a second. And of course, I'm very excited about that, mostly because Microsoft was not really known as a design firm, right? And now things are changing quite a lot. Actually, I was reading a poll this morning. I think 15 to 20 years old people, and 52% of them said that Microsoft is an innovative firm, which is pretty cool, I think. It used to be probably around 10% in that age range. So that's pretty cool, and I think that the design is definitely playing a big role. So I know personally quite a lot of designers at Microsoft in Redmond, and those guys are full of energy and passion for what they do. People like Albert Chum, for example, he's one of the really of the fathers of the Microsoft Design Language. Seeing those guys take more importance at Microsoft is very exciting. So I'm very happy about that. Let's talk about the name first. So the name, we used to talk about Metro, and as you know, there was a problem with the name, the legal implications, blah, blah, blah. And so now we talk about Windows Store apps instead of Metro apps. Microsoft Design Language, or Design Style Language, if you want to go overboard, and Microsoft Design Style Principles, or Microsoft Design Principles, whatever. Those are the new official names, and if you're interested to read all about it, there is a URI here. You'll get the slide, so you'll get the URI. And there is a page at Microsoft.com explaining all that about the guidelines and the names. So much about the names. Let's talk about the principles, because that's really where it's interesting. How many of you, by any chance, attended my design talk last year? Anybody? No? Good. So you'll hear that for the first time. That's great. So there are five design principles that Microsoft designers came together and thought and talked about it and made a list, basically. And those five design principles govern what you do when you design Microsoft applications, when you design Windows 8 apps, Windows Phone apps, or even other platforms, right? So the first one is called Pride in Craftsmanship. And what it means is that you guys should be proud of what you're doing, okay? The mere fact that you take 2 days out of your busy schedule to come to a conference and to attend a design session at 4 p.m., you should be super proud, really. Well done. So this is really about, you know, going out there, putting a lot of polish into your application, making your application count, right? And I think we see that quite a lot now in Metro apps. Those applications are bold, and they are quite strongly typed, and they are very easy to recognize. So there is this aspect. Fast and fluid, because we live in a digital world, we design digital applications, and so we have motion and animation. Motion is extremely, extremely important in those applications. And so spend time in making your applications fluid, in making those animations as fast as possible. Nowadays, we have async and wait. We have the previous session in that room was about that. We have threads, right? So they help us with the multi-threading. It's still hard, but it's a little bit easier with async and wait. And so don't hesitate to put everything which is not absolutely critical to the UI on a background thread. It's quite easy to dispatch back to the main UI thread if you have to. And like this, your applications are going to be smooth and to be fluid. Authentically digital is the third principle, and here we talk about the fact that we design for devices which have a flat screen of glass, mostly, right? And we don't want to lie to our users about it. Okay, when the users pass a finger on it, they are not going to feel texture. Going to come back to that in a moment. So no need for too many shadows, no need for too many halo effects, no need for too many skeuomorphic tricks. Okay, we are not designing a book with a real leather cover. What we are doing is something which is digital, so let's be authentic about it. do more with less is really about maybe constraining your applications and doing one thing but doing it very well. Okay, so we don't design for those platforms applications which can do everything, including coffee, like Microsoft Word, for example. Word is like the example, the archetype of the desktop app, which can do so many features that nobody really uses everything. When we design for Microsoft design style applications, for Windows Store application or phone apps, we do much smaller apps and we concentrate on solving a few problems. Okay, and then we can have those applications collaborate together. So maybe instead of having one app which does something, a lot of things, right, we have two apps and those apps can communicate together. And in Windows 8, for example, we have contracts. I'm going to talk more about that in a moment. And that helps to share information and to communicate like that. So those are the five principles. And now for the rest of the session, I'm going to try to illustrate that with examples and with tricks to help you build applications which follow that. So first of all, let's talk about typography. And I told you that you should be craftsmen, you should be proud of what you're doing, right? And typography plays a role into that. So beautiful typography makes an application very beautiful and pleasurable. It makes me especially happy because I'm Swiss, and the Swiss typography with the Helvetica font and all that movement plays a big role into that. And the Swiss typography is strongly aligned and uses grids to find harmony. And that's exactly what we do also when we design. We align things, we make sure that the spacing is everywhere the same. There are some magic numbers, right, 20 pixels on Windows 8, 24 pixels on the phone, things like that. So Swiss typography is an authentically digital typography. It doesn't have serif. The serif are those small bars that you have, like if you take Times New Roman, for example, you will see some small bars at the end of the T and then at the bottom of the T. Now, those things are actually a remnant from the past, right? It was from the time where those letters were made of lead, and they had to be stronger because otherwise they would break after a few prints. So nowadays, we don't need that anymore because the fonts are going on the screen. And in fact, those serifs are actually making it a little bit more difficult to read. So sans serif fonts are actually more readable than serif fonts. That's why they are more suited for computers or for phones or for things like that. There was some study that if you choose the right font, you can speed up the reading time of a website by 50% in some cases. So this is really important. So Swiss typography, now this is Helvetica. Here is an example of an ad made in the 50s. So those principles are already quite old, right? And here we see quite a lot of the Microsoft design IDs. We have a bold, strong background color. We have very few colors, actually just two, right? White and blue. A lot of text, a lot of typography, and not so many information, really. Like there are no icons, there is no image, background image, nothing. We just have those lines which give a feeling of motion. So there is also some fluidness into that design. The Microsoft design language is also strongly inspired by Bauhaus. Bauhaus is a movement that came from Germany initially, but then swept over most of Europe in the 1920s, so just after the First World War. And here we have another example. So it's an industrial design and architecture school, right? And here we have an example of Bauhaus design where, again, it's very bare and pure. We have this strong red, right, the white text on top of it. Typography plays a big role. Here they played a bit with the letters. And then we have just very, very few information, just Ausstellung, which in German means exposition. And then the date, which I think is September 1923. And we see that this ad, if I hadn't told you it's 1923, we wouldn't know, right? It's ageless. Nowadays, we still have people doing this kind of design. So that's something which is particularly beautiful. Another example, this time it's a book. And again, right, we see the usage of strong colors, the typography, which is very bare and minimal. There is just this lamp here, which is kind of funny. But basically, all those principles are still very, very actual, very, very current. The name Metro initially came from the fact that this design style was inspired by transportation signage quite strongly. And here we have a few principles which are very important, because when you run into an airport, you don't have time to look for information. Okay? You have to find immediately, where is my gate? Where is, if you don't speak the language, you know, where is check-in? Okay, there is this luggage here, it's probably that. And those icons are very universal. They use pretty much the same fonts and the same icons everywhere around the world. So those principles are well known. People know that. They are very familiar with that. And in the phone, on Windows Phone or Windows 8, we try to convey that familiarity. People are busy. They don't really have time to look for information. So when they look at the home screen, for example, immediately they should see what's happening. When is my next appointment, right? So those principles are quite important, and they are really universal. If you go around the world, you will find the same fonts pretty much everywhere, the same principles pretty much everywhere, playing with colors to convey information. For example, even in Japan, right? Here the colors are coding the lines of the subway. So it's conveying some information, but it's some very simple information. Again, no icons. Or in the US, same thing. Everywhere around the world, you can find your way in a train station or in an airport. In terms of font, we don't use Helvetica so much. We use Sego on those Windows properties. Sego is a font which has been especially developed for computer screen. Sego UI especially is good for slates, so a little bit bigger screen, so slates, desktop, laptop. Okay. And the readability is very important. So sometimes you have to play a little bit with either the font size or, even better, maybe with the font weight. So we have bold and light and even semi-bold and semi-light. So that gives you quite a lot of playground. Okay. Try not to abuse font sizes too much, because it's very confusing for the eye to have too many font sizes on the screen. I'm going to talk about that in a second. But instead, using maybe a semi-bold font is going to bring a little bit of weight to some titles, for example, or some texts. Now, on the phone, we use Sego WP, which is Sego Windows Phone. And this font is very similar to the UI one, but it has a few differences, which were especially developed for small screens, and especially when you have the sun in the eyes, right? Because nowadays, we go out with your apps. So it needs to be readable. So take your applications out in the sun and check how it works. Okay, maybe you have to change the contrast a little bit. Maybe you have to change the font weight a little bit. Okay. Sego WP comes also in bold, semi-light, and light. There is also a black variant of the font, which can be used if you really want to emphasize something. So I have to say I'm using that very, very rarely, personally. In terms of font sizes, as I said, try not to have too many font sizes on your screens, because it's very confusing for the eye. You don't really know what is what. The whole Windows 8 experience is actually built with four font sizes only. 9 points, which is really for small labels. 11 and 20 points for, you know, text and maybe some clickable areas, buttons, etc. 42 points for titles. Typically, we try to observe that. It's not compulsory, right? All those principles are guidelines, really. But the advantage if you use a small number of fonts is that it will be more readable. And then you can play with the font weight or even the colors if you want to underline something, if you want to make something more, important on your page. I said underline. Actually, don't use underline if you can avoid it. Underlining brings quite a lot of confusion to the eye. So nowadays, we try to avoid that. Even on the web, you might have noticed that on the web, right, it was really where we saw those links which had underlines below. Nowadays, designers tend to come away from that and instead to use colors or maybe a different background even to show that an item is clickable. Now this is an application called MetroTweet, which is running on Windows 8. And this one, of course, typography is important here because it's a text-heavy application, right? It's a Twitter app. And here, it's an example where they took a very classic design. They have these columns like that, and everything is aligned, so you have the grid principle, which is good. But at the same time, it's an application which is very classic, right? And notice that even the font sizes are not very different, like the name of the Twitter, is not that much bigger than the text. And the clickable areas are very subtle, right? Like I can click on, in the first one on the right, I can click on youtube.com, blah, blah, blah. It's very subtle, really. They have this kind of light blue. They play with colors for icons and topics, but it's not that strong, really, on the main screen, right? So this is one example of a typography-heavy app, and that's another one. Now, this one is a contrast, really, okay? Here, this is Rowy. It's probably the most popular Twitter app on the phone, and then they ported that to Windows 8. It uses MVVM Lite, by the way. MetroTweet also uses MVVM Lite, just mentioning that in passing. And here we have this usage of green, which is kind of special, right? It's not my favorite color, honestly, but why not? And we see usage of icons also to go to the home tab, reply tab, direct message tab, where in opposition in MetroTweet, they don't have a lot of icons here. They really have text to show those columns. And finally, my favorite Twitter app is this one, Twitro. So this one is pretty cool. It's actually expensive by Twitter apps standards. It's $10. But come on, $10 is like two coffee, you know. So I bought it. I'm using it. I like it. I like the usage of typography in this one. So a few icons. The typography is interesting. The fact that they put my name vertical, I don't know. I just like it. So interesting contrast, right, between three apps which do exactly the same thing, eventually, right? It's a Twitter app. There is no surprise. But see that you can be really creative about the design of your apps. Now, motion is very important because, like I said, we are very lucky, actually. We design for systems that move, that can be animated, right? Imagine designing for a book, right, where you have paper. Well, there is only so much that you can do. But here we have the possibility to give a totally character, a totally different mood to our app by playing with the animations and the acceleration, okay? I spend a lot of time on animations and especially on finding the right acceleration, even for short animations, and maybe even especially for short animations. So when you have some mouse over effects, when you use a mouse and all that, right, spend time until you find the right character. Animations are one of the only features that designers, if the animation is really complex, that our designers go into a blend and do themselves. Because sometimes they have an idea and it's really hard in words to explain how it should, what it should do, right? So if it's a complex animation, I put the designer in front of blend and I tell him, go ahead, do it yourself, because it has to be perfect, right? So motion is important. This is an example of something called motion design. Even though it's a static ad, of course, it's printed, right? But you have this motion going on. And I want to show you two examples of motion design. The first one is Saul Bass. Saul Bass was a designer in the 1930s. He worked with Hitchcock, especially quite a lot, on credits for movies and all that. He did a lot of other things, obviously. And the second one is a much more recent example of kinetic typography. And we'll see how that looks like. So. Here we go. So the first one is the title sequence of North by Northwest. And here we see, first of all, there is a lot of motion, right? Everything keeps moving. We have this grid, which is aligning the text. And again, that's very strongly inspired by the Bauhaus movement. The text never stays still very long, right? It's maybe 2 seconds maximum. It keeps moving all the time. And they have an interesting usage of typography. Like, for example, in the title, which will come out just now, to signify those arrows, because it's a direction, right? North by northwest, so it's kind of interesting. And now you notice how it changes now, and the grid was actually a wall of window. And now you have the video playing in the background and some text in the foreground. So when you do that, you have to be very careful to make sure that your text is readable. Okay, so dim the image, for example, by putting it on a black background and putting the opacity maybe to 50%. Or even lower, actually. When you do these kind of things, the images or the video, maybe in some cases, are suggesting something, suggesting an atmosphere. So they should not take away the readability, right? So make them dark enough and make sure that your text has the right font weight so that it is still readable. The other example is the intro of Pulp Fiction. So this one is much more recent, obviously. But you have the same kind of principles applying, right? You have this motion all the time, everything keeps moving all the time. There is some interesting typography, and here they play a little bit with the name Tarantino, right? It was visible for just a few seconds, and then they remove the background, which is kind of funny. I mean, he's a director, you know? But still, it's cool, I mean. And now you have the text which comes, which is, by the way, bright orange, okay? And they played with the typography a little bit because Pulp Fiction, the name Pulp, comes from the fact that those magazines, well, you have all these kind of weird stories in the 1930s, 1940s in the US, were printed on very cheap paper. So after a while, when you read them, they turn to pulp, which is why it's called Pulp Fiction. So you see the bleeding, right, the orange in the background, which suggests that the letter is printed cheaply, it's cheap paper. Again, some typography, again, some movements. Even the pictures are actually turned into drawings, right? Here with the typography, they suggest, you see the different names are printed with a different font, right? Which is kind of interesting. And then you see Uma Thurman, which is again a different font, right? So they suggest that she's very important in the movie, and she is. So that's those are two interesting examples of motion and typography and kinetic typography and all that. And I would like to show you an example. And actually, I was silly because I didn't start the emulator. So let me start the emulator, and then we'll talk. And when I'm done, I will go back to show you this example, because the emulator takes a very long time to start. So let me just do that. Yeah, we'll get back to that in a second. Okay, so motion design. So when you do motion design, what I'm thinking about in the Windows Phone is the panorama or the pivot, right? Panorama is something which is really very specific to Windows Phone. You don't see that on any other platform, right? You have the background image, so again, the principle of north by northwest, right? Which should be dark enough that it's not interfering with the text. Okay, then you swipe, and then it's going to move, and the background image moves with an effect which is called parallax. Basically, it means that it moves at a different rate than the text in front, so it gives an impression of depth. That's something which is really very typical from these principles here. Just going to start the emulator. Here we go. So motion is very important, and again, right, I guess what I want you to take from that is spend a lot of time on the motion, make sure that your animations are fluid. We have a lot of problems with scrolling. This is always the pain point, especially when you do apps in XAML, so on the phone. Nowadays on Windows Phone 8 is not too bad. There is a new control called the long list selector, which if you were at my session this morning, I used. It's a replacement for release box, and it scrolls much better than the old list box. So really use that. On Windows 8, and especially on the Surface or the small slates on the Windows RT devices, scrolling is also a bit of a pain point, right? So there are tricks around that. You can maybe simplify your templates a little bit, make them a little bit less complex. Maybe you can play with the virtualization, like, you know, remove the virtualization if you don't have too many items, and then it will scroll better. These kind of tricks. But really, this is a point where easily we can spend quite a lot of hours or maybe even days trying to make it better. But that's really important. One thing which is to underline is that with animations, you give help to your users. You tell them what to do. Like, for example, on the phone, right, if I switch it off and then I switch it on again, there is a lock screen. If I tap the home button, you see what happens? It's just bumping a little bit, right? What it tells me is that, oh, okay, I need to push this up. And, okay, I didn't need to call support to know how to unlock my phone. Immediately, I know that. If it was bumping to the right, then I would know, okay, I have to switch to the right. So this is just an example where animations can really help you. But they need to be immediate. As soon as the user touches the screen, you need to start scrolling, because otherwise he won't understand. There will be a disconnect between the action and the reaction. Okay? Now, we are in a digital age, which means that we should really embrace that. Now, that's an example of something called skeuomorphism. Why don't I have full screen? This is annoying. Oh, I know why. Better? No. Okay, let me exit that and do it again. And now it should be better. No. Jeez. This projector has been annoying me since the beginning, so last try, okay? Otherwise, we'll just go with that resolution. Okay. P duplicate is good, yes. And now I want you to project. No. Well, I think I have to give up. Sorry for that. It's a little bit smaller than I would like, but that's what we have. So this is the iBooks app on iPad. And here we see really a strong example of skeuomorphism, which means it's a representation of life into the computer. Apple is very well known for that. They do, for example, stitched leather in their contact applications. They love to have paper which shows some underlines and maybe even some tears, right? Even though on the screen, if you pass your finger on it, you won't feel it. So basically, skeuomorphism is kind of a lie, right? We tell the user, well, this is something, but there is a lot of information which is not totally necessary. Now, I'm not saying it's bad, right? It's just a design style. The information here which is not necessary is the shelves. It doesn't bring any value to the user, okay? It's just kind of a gadget. Now, opposed to that, the Kindle app is actually an example which is authentically digital, right? So here we see quite a few principles from Microsoft Design. First of all, the content is king. We have this big area with the books, okay? And those books are kind of floating, so there is no additional information. There is one thing which is not totally Microsoft Design. You see, there is a small shadow under the books, right? So it's not totally flat. But it's fine, by the way. Those are just guidelines, right? So feel free to exit that and to add some value if you feel that it's value. Personally, I love the shadow. I think it gives me the feeling that, okay, that book is kind of popping out a little bit, and it makes me want to click on it. So that's a good example. Other principles that we can see here, the usage of typography, the usage of color to signify which is, in that case, a selected tab. Okay, even though it doesn't look like a tab, it actually acts like a tab, the cloud and downloaded one. So it's a nice app. Another example of skeuomorphism, the icons on the iPhone, right? The first one, for example, is interesting because I doubt that my kids ever saw a compass, a digital compass in their life. My elder is 11 years old, maybe once, I don't know. They know what a compass is, but they don't know that it looks like that or that it used to look like that. Okay, or the last one, the camera. If I check the camera in my phone, it doesn't look like that at all. Okay, as opposed to the Windows Store apps icons, Now, honestly, I'm not a super big fan of those ones, except maybe the SkyDrive one, which I think is cool. The other ones are a little bit poor in my taste, but it's just to show you the contrast, right? By the way, talking about icons, you may know that we have application bars on Windows 8 applications and Windows Phone apps. Now, on Windows 8 apps, you have actually a file, a big file, which has all the styles for all those buttons here. And in order to find them more easily, I made an app, which is actually showing them all. So I'm going to scroll. Oh, you don't see it. Let me go back here. I have to press Escape. And now I'm going to go to the app. Here we go. So, okay, so let's go from the start. And those are all the buttons which are available. Ooh, so many. Okay. And those buttons are interesting because the icon is actually a glyph. What it means is that they use a font called Sego UI symbol. And then you see there is a glyph, like for example here, this kind of weird number, hexadecimal number, is actually the letter. Okay? So when you do applications on Windows 8, you can use those icons. Now obviously you can use your own if you prefer, but there are a lot which are already available. If you want to use those, what you have to do is go into the common folder. There is standardstyles.xaml. And then they commented out all those buttons. Why? Because like this, it speeds up the startup time of the application. The parser doesn't need to go and parse all those styles. So you need to make sure that the one you want to use are correctly set up. So those are all the buttons. And then you need to comment, to uncomment the one that you want to use. So this app that I made here is helping you with that. You get the name of the style, you get the glyph in case you want to use it directly. You can even copy that directly to the clipboard, and that will be part of the code that I will put on my blog this weekend. So if you want to use that, please, by all means, feel free. Oh, the phone started, so now I'm going to do application deployment. Here we go, and I'm going to take, just quickly because I want to show you that app. Here we go. So this app that I want to show you is the IMDb application. And remember I told you that we had this motion and then the background picture, and this one is actually exactly showing that. So here we go. IMDb is the Internet Movie Database. It's an app that we made at Identity Mine. And you see you have the background image, right, which is quite dark. And then if I swipe, you see the background is moving at a different rate. So you have this kind of feeling of animation, right? And then the text, of course, you need to make sure that the text is readable. So here we play with font size and also with the colors to signify what is important. The date is maybe a little bit less important, so we dim it a little bit. We make it a little bit gray like that. Here, those are all clickable items. So that's a good illustration of this principle, where you have motion, okay? You have the background image, you have the text, the typography, and all that. Okay, so application bar buttons, right? Now, if you use those, your users are going to feel at home quite fast because they are going to recognize what is it used for. Now, Windows 8 apps typically are delightful and playful. Windows Phone apps as well. Those are apps which are consumer apps often, right? So more and more we do enterprise apps. It's coming more and more. But still, try to delight your users. Like, for example, using LiveTiles is a great way to delight your users and to make their experience enjoyable. So here we see the first one on top. Those are my two daughters. And this is my Facebook cover picture. So immediately if I change my cover picture in Facebook, which is the picture on top of my wall, what they call the wall, or my timeline, I think it's called now, then the picture is going to change on the phone as well. So there is this feeling of familiarity. Oh, that's my phone. No mistake. The second one, and by the way, it rotates, and then at the back, we see the status update, the latest status update of Facebook. So it's also cool because it reminds me that, okay, last time I posted, that happened, right? Or in that case, my daughter had just broken her wrist doing snowboard, so it was a not so happy occasion. But anyway, she's a happy person, so it's fine. The next one here is My Trips. My Trips is fantastic. It's my best friend when I travel, and I travel a lot. It's the application which tells me if my flight is canceled or if it's delayed. So now you see I have the green checkbox. Green checkbox means okay, I don't have to worry. If it's red with a cross, oh my God, I need to start the app, and then I need to find what happened and call the airline. And that happened to me on my latest trip, actually. This flight, Zurich to IAD's Washington Dulles, was actually delayed by 2 hours. When I woke up at 7, I saw, oops, it's red. I called the airline, I managed to switch my flight, I went through Newark instead, and I got my connection. Otherwise, I would have had to sleep in Chicago and come to Seattle 1 day too late, which is really annoying. So if I had just gone to the airport, I would have totally missed that. Okay? So here, without even starting the app, I knew that something was wrong, which is really great. Finally, the last one is called TV Show. It's a great app as well if you watch a lot of TV shows like me. It pretty much tells me that when I go back home, I will be able to watch New Girl and How I Met Your Mother and The Following, which are two shows that I watch. And also the pictures show characters from that TV show. So it's delightful. It's friendly. It makes me happy during the day, right? I know I'm a little bit shallow, but basically, you know, it's kind of cool. Oh, nice, I have a new episode of whatever. So live tiles are a great way to do that. And you can do, of course, live tiles on Windows 8 as well. Those are three examples of apps that we made. The Nickelodeon app, which delights your kids because they show their favorite heroes. They rotate, so you see all kind of different pictures. The one on the bottom, sorry. The one on the bottom is Encyclopedia Britannica, and here they have articles that they put in the foreground from time to time. So, okay, I'm interested. What is that animal? I will tap on that and start the application to see what is that, right? And Merriam-Webster is a dictionary. They have the word of the day, so every day they have a different word coming up, and it's great when you want to learn new things, right? Recuse, okay. I know more or less what it means in English, but I'm not totally sure, so maybe I will just tap and see what it actually means. So really, live tiles are the entrance door to your app, right? Spend time on that. And plus, it's actually pretty easy to do. So I'm not going to show demo today, but I'm sure you can find videos either at Tech Days or other things. There is documentation on the web as well. Live tiles are pretty cool. Another example of something which I find delightful, so this is the home screen of my phone, the lock screen of my phone, and that's cool because I have a lot of information there, again, what's coming up to me. I see that I actually took that screenshot in the plane to Newark, which is why my phone is in flight mode. So this is what I see normally, but when I play music, suddenly I see something else, and that's the artist that I'm currently listening to, and that is... Thank you, Iron Maiden. They come to Switzerland in June. I go and see them. Yay. Anywho, so that's great. I find it great because it's right now my phone is doing something else and gives me information about it. And then when it switches to the next song, another artist is going to switch to that. And it even works offline. They actually load and cache the pictures, which is pretty cool. So that kind of thing is really delightful, right? Another example, the Nick app that I mentioned before. Now here we had a small issue to solve, which was the discoverability, and especially for kids. Windows 8 put the content in the foreground, so you have a lot of content. And the functions, the bars, are actually hidden. So you have to know that you have to swipe to show the bars. So here what we did is that you see the small tongue of slime on the red, on the right-hand side. When you start the app, it's actually going to come down a little bit, like slime. What do the kids do? They try to touch it, right? And then you get the bar which comes down. So interestingly, here we made kind of a compromise, right? Because this is skeuomorphism, actually, the slime which comes on the screen. It's definitely not authentically digital, but it's okay because it brings value to the app here. The value being, I'm going to teach those kids that if they do that gesture, then it will bring the top application bar. Okay? And by the way, you need internet to use that app. So if you lose internet, you're not very happy because you cannot use the app. But we manage to make this experience at least a little bit funny, right? Because it's always funny to see Patrick's underwear. I know it's Patrick because I have kids, so. I talked about being proud of what you do, right? Your application should be bold and beautiful, should be really strongly typed. And of course, colors help you a lot. On Windows Phone 8, we have now 20 accent colors. Okay, so it's quite a lot. You can really customize your phone to your liking. And all those colors can be used in the app to underline something important. Right, there is a resource called Phone Accent Brush, if I'm not mistaken. So if you use that resource in your app, it's going to change when the user changes the SIM color of the phone. Windows 8 can also be customized with colors. Now, to make things a little bit more convenient, I went ahead and I actually copied here the XAML or HTML color code, so you can use that. It's not compulsory to use them, but if you use those colors, it's, again, going to bring some familiarity to your users. And for Windows 8, I did the same, so you have the color codes here. Now, spacing is very important in the Microsoft Design Language. I told you that it's very strongly inspired by Swiss typography and Bauhaus, where grids and alignments are very important. Okay? Designers like to work with grids. And it's no surprise that the control that we use the most in XAML is the grid, right? Because it's just suited very well for these kind of things. So space is important. And in Windows 8, we use a grid with a unit of 20 by 20 pixels. So typically, we do all the spacing in units of 20 pixels. For example, the content on top of an application starts typically at, well, not typically, starts normally at 7 units, 140 pixels. And the text is baselined at 100 pixels, 5 units. Now, if you use the templates from Visual Studio, you will get those values immediately, right? On the left-hand side, when you're in landscape mode, we use 120 pixels. Like this, it's going to line up with the text just nice. And when you rotate your screen in portrait, I'm going to show you in a moment how you can design that, then we switch to 100 pixels. Like this, we make things a little bit narrower, and then we have a little bit more information on the screen, because in portrait, you have less information. Another example with lists here, where we see that the content starts at 7 units, 140 pixels. You can do dense lists, where you have one unit, 20 pixels between the items, or loose lists, where you have two units, right? You have less information on the screen, but it's a little bit more readable. People have to scroll, but it's okay, it's digital, right? The principle of below the fold, which, you know, in web designers were very strongly interested in having information above the fold, meaning that people should not scroll. While with touch screen, it's really less important because it's so fast to quickly scroll down, right? So these concepts are a little bit less important. So you can do maybe a list which is a little bit looser, a little bit more readable, and people are going to scroll a little bit faster, but it's okay. Yes, so you can do that. Microsoft will tell you that it's not very good. But personally, I kind of disagree. I think that it's okay, especially when I use my fingers. And there are a lot of applications in the store which do that, where you can scroll vertically and horizontally. What you need to think about is leave enough space at the bottom to allow the user, especially with the mouse, to scroll horizontally using the wheel. And actually, I find it a good experience because the wheel is going to scroll vertically on vertical scroll viewers and horizontally on the grid view with the same movement, right? Which personally I find quite pleasurable, but some people disagree with me, so it's up to you to choose. Some people say, no, everything should be horizontal only, but then I find that it's annoying because I have to scroll a lot. So it's a little bit a question of taste, okay? Another example here, this is a an app that I made and published in the store. It's a URL shortener. So here we see those spacings, right? We have the the title, which is baseline at 100 pixel. We have the content starting at 140, 120 on the side. And notice the buttons. I put quite a lot of space between those buttons. I have text which are reasonably long, but I have enough space, so it's okay. By the way, you know that you should put the buttons on each side of the slate. You know why? Because when you use a slide with your fingers like that, and you can touch them with the thumbs. Okay, so on both sides, right? And if I go in portrait, then, first of all, I made everything a little bit tighter. And again, the templates are going to help me do that. And I'm going to show you for the grid view how to do that. And then the buttons, what I did is that I made them tighter and I removed the text. Because I'm thinking, well, if the user goes like that, he has less space. I prefer to have more buttons with a little bit less information. The icon should be good enough for that. But it allows me to make the buttons a little bit tighter. When you go on Windows Phone, in Windows Phone 8, there is a possibility to have a grid. And this grid is going to help you to align things. So if you want to show the grid, what you're doing is that. So you go into mainpage.xaml, for example, and then there is this line of XAML code, which you can uncomment, the image line. And this is going to give you the grid. Now, of course, when you go to production, you need to remove the grid and maybe even remove the image, the actual image from the application, right? Now, portrait, snap view, design, design demo. So, who doesn't know what snap view is? Raise your hand, don't be afraid. Okay, so snap view is that. Let's imagine that I have Internet Explorer. Oops. Here we go. Okay, so let's imagine that I have, for example, the calendar open and another app, Internet Explorer, for example. Ah, no, Internet Explorer doesn't work because I set it to be on the desktop, so I'm going to take whatever, this one, the People app. Now, what I can do is take this app. Come on, take this app. It doesn't want to do it. Here we go, and put it here. And you see, it changed templates. Now that is the snap view. And then it means that I can put another app here, for example, the desktop or the calendar that I started just before. And then I can switch from one side to the other. Okay, now I have the People app in big screen, and I have another view here, the snap view for the calendar. So if you want to do that, when you just start with a file new project, let's do that, file new project, and you take a Windows Store application, unfortunately, the page that they have, the default page, is not very good. It's very, very basic and simple. So it doesn't help you to do those states between portrait, landscape, snapped, field. For example, here I have the main page, and you see this is really a very basic page. So you don't want that one. What you want to do is get rid of this one. And then, instead, I'm going to add a new item. And I'm going to choose not the blank page, which is a very basic one, but the basic page, which is less basic than the blank page. Do you follow? Okay. So the basic page is better. And then I'm going to name that mainpage.xaml. And then it asks me, do you want to add some additional files? Now, the process here is a little bit weird because they have some helper classes which are not actually part of the SDK. They add them into your app as files. And now I have a bunch of files added to the common folder. Some of them you may not use, but the one which is important is the layout aware page. And this one is really the one that I'm going to use now as my base page. You see, I'm using now a common colon layout aware page. Now, this one is good because if I go in expression blend, I can do the styling for my application using visual states. And visual states are very convenient because you see exactly what's happening. So here I have an app in Blend, and I set this application up to have design time data. If you came to my talk this morning, you saw how to do that in Windows Phone. If you didn't, well, you can watch a video. So design time data is going to allow me to see something in my lists in Blend. Here we go. You see I have some content. This is design time data. And now you see I have here the 120 pixels. But if I go to device and I switch to portrait, you see the application is going to clip here. Don't worry about the fact that it doesn't resize. I think it's a small bug in Blend. I'm not sure why. But basically, I see also that my text here, my title, was shifted a little bit, right? Now, this guy here needs to come a little bit more here. And to do that, what you can do is enable state recording. So now this is going to change that value only in the state full screen portrait. And then I'm going to go and change the padding of the grid from 120 to 100. And here we go. Okay. And then if I want to go into snap view, this is snap view. You see now I have my title is much smaller now because this is a layout aware page does this automatically. Now for snap view, which is a view where you rather scroll vertically, right? A grid view is not good. A grid view is really horizontal scrolling. So what I'm going to do is enable state recording again. I'm going to take the grid view and hide it completely. And instead, I place the list view on my page. I'm going to show it. And I design another data template which is more suitable for this view. Maybe with a little bit less information, but that's okay. Okay? So spend time on the snap view. The snap view, you cannot prevent your users from putting your app in snap view. Okay? You can prevent the application from rotating. So you can put it in landscape and it's always landscape. But snap view, you cannot prevent it. So you need to spend a little bit more design effort and integration effort in Blend to do that. But the nice thing is that if I run the application now, if I run my application now, okay, so the application runs. In full screen, I have that. I'm not going to rotate because otherwise, we can try. Let's try. So now it should rotate. Let's try. No good. It doesn't work. It doesn't want to rotate. I think maybe when I project, I cannot rotate. But if I move it in Snap View, then I have my other template. And now I can scroll happily vertically, and it's much better. Okay? So that is important. And you see how easy it is in Blend. But don't be fooled, it's additional effort because the designers have to do a new comp for the snap view, also for the portrait view. On the other hand, the field view, which is, let me take another app. Okay, that is called, this thing here is called the field view, right? This is snapped and then this is field. The field view, as in filling, right? Filling the space. The field view doesn't require much effort because mostly we just take the landscape view and then we do the automatic resize, the flow layout. So in the case of a grid view, it doesn't matter. So that is very easy, but the snap view needs a little bit more work. Okay. So, content is king. And I already talked to you about that a little bit in the Nickelodeon demo, the one with the slime, right? Where basically the whole functions are hidden. Now, on the start screen of Windows, this is very visible. There is no function button here. Okay? Well, there is my logged in status, in that case myself, and there are live tiles, and those are the content of the start screen. Now, if you want to show functions, you have to swipe, and then the application bar shows. Same thing for the charms. If I swipe from the side, I see the charms appearing with additional functionality, and information, like the time, for example. So really content is king is in the center, and then you hide all the Chrome. Another example, this is a Zune application, which is like the grandfather of the Microsoft design style. This is the first application where they actually used it. Same thing, you see the content in the center, right? Some information around, almost no color, so it's very bare. And the icons are very, very simple. Another example of Zune, here the background is white, and you see the content is really in the center, right? The music, in that case, or videos and movies, so same principle. On Xbox, where they use the Microsoft Design Language for the dashboard, same thing, right? You have really this content, which is very important. Here, interestingly, they have some special constraint. The clickable areas have to be big, and there is quite a lot of space between those areas because you use the Kinect sometimes, and Kinect is a little bit, is not super precise, so you have to make an area which is big enough. By the way, think about it on the phone as well, right? If you make a grid which contains a button, content, make the background of this grid transparent and not null, because null doesn't react to touch, but transparent does. So like this, you expand your clickable area, right? Everything should be bigger. Sometimes you can maybe make your button bigger and then put some negative margin to put it in place. Like this, the clickable area is bigger, because we all have fat fingers, right? Sometimes we are walking, it's vibrating, and it's difficult to tap, okay? Another example of content which is king here is the Windows 8 video application, right? There is nothing else than movie here, nothing else. If you tap on the screen, then you will see some Chrome, okay? But really, the content is in the foreground. Or the Kindle app, here again, nothing else but text, right? Except if I swipe, and then I will see some function buttons. On the phone, you can do the same thing. Here, the content is really those pictures of food, right? It's a food spotting app that we designed, and it's a very nice app. You can also play with the background to give a different mood into your app, but really the content is in the center. Now, because of that, it makes certain things a little bit difficult. For example, search is such an example. Search is a little bit hidden, and it's recommended to use the search charm, which you get by swiping from the side. See the first button there, the first charm? So this is a central search functionality. Now, if I am on the start menu, it's going to search the applications, or the settings, or the files, or I can start an application and pass the search string to that app. Those apps here are all the ones that have registered themselves as being searchable. There is a search contract. I'm going to show that to you in a second. Okay? Now, the problem is that this search function is not easy to find. It's not very discoverable. If people never used Windows 8, they won't find it easily. So you can cheat a little bit and, for example, put a search button on your screen. And then if you tap the search button, what we do is that we open the search pane, okay? And like this, we suggest to the user, well, there is more, you know, you can search, right? In some cases, search is critical to the application, right? Think about Wikipedia, for example. You need to search Wikipedia. Or think about a retailer, right? If you cannot search the right brand of paper or, you know, whatever, basically the retailer is not going to sell. So in those cases, maybe you need to cheat a little bit. Now, I'm not going to lie to you, Microsoft is not super happy with this kind of tricks. Well, that's their problem. So we do it anyway. However, think about supporting the central search function, because for advanced users, for people who know what they are doing, they will use it and they want to see your app in the list. Okay? If they don't see your app, they are never going to start it. They are not going to think about it. By the way, you cannot influence the order. The user is in charge. Okay? What's going to happen is that on top you will have pinned applications. That's the user who decides to pin. You will have often used applications, and then the rest in alphabetical order. But don't name your applications underline, 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 my super app, right? It's not very nice. Okay, collaboration. So I talked to you about Win as One, right? Try to collaborate with other apps. A good example of that is as soon as you have a SnapView, you have a kind of collaboration. And SnapView, all the applications can be put in SnapView. So for example, here I have USA Today on the left, I have the video app on the right, and I can switch from one to the other. Now this collaboration is very minimal because really those apps don't do anything together. They just happen to be here on the screen at the same time. Something a little bit more interesting is this example where we see my URL shortener here on the left. And when I select an item and click on the context menu, I have view. And because it's a URL, I'm using a launcher. This is a class in Windows 8 which does that. It's going to launch in the field view, in Internet Explorer, on the right-hand side, automatically. It's given you, it's free, right? You don't need to do anything for that. But here we have a nice collaboration because the user doesn't lose the context of where he was. And by the way, SnapView, in my opinion, is a major differentiating factor from a Surface RT to an iPad. The fact that you can have two apps on the screen at the same time. And really, when I travel and people look over my shoulder in the plane or whatever, this is always what they ask. Oh, you can have two apps at the same time. That's pretty cool. Okay. So that's an example of collaboration. But you can go even further. And you can implement the share contract. So what is the share contract? Well, let's imagine that I have Internet Explorer running in full screen. And then I swipe from the side to show the charms. You see the second button from the top, it's share. What's going to happen here is that it's going to show me a list of applications that registered themselves in Windows 8 as being able to handle content of type URI. Because in that particular view, what Internet Explorer has is a URI. The top one is my app, my shortener. It's on the top because I use it a lot, because I test it a lot, that's why. And then what happens is that the application starts, but in a flyout. So again, that's very cool because I don't lose the context of what I was doing. The application starts and gets the content, in that case, the URI. And then the user can go and shorten it if he wants. That is the case where my application is running as a shared target. An application can be also a shared source. In that case, for example, I have the app. If I go and share, I will see all the apps which are able to get some text, because that's why what my application is sharing. And for example, if I tap on Metro Tweet, you see it's automatically filling with the content that I prepared. So sharing is really nice. It's a nice way to collaborate with other apps. And especially if you have apps which do something very well, like Metro Tweet is great for tweeting. Well, I'm not going in my application to implement Twitter, right? Which is really annoying to implement. You have to do the whole authentication mechanism. And no, I prefer to use whatever the user prefers, okay? So share contract demo, let's see that, how you do that. So I have an example here prepared. And again, I'm going to pass you the code on my blog later. Here we go. So if you want to be a shared target, if you want to receive content, the first thing you need to do is edit the package.apix manifest, which is where you declare capabilities of your app and all kind of metadata. And then you go to declarations. And here you can select your declarations. For example, remember I told you can be a search target. You can say, yes, I accept search. Well, that would be the search contract here at the bottom. Okay. Now you have all kinds of contracts that you can implement. For example, the share target contract. And here I'm going to declare which data formats I can receive. So I say I can receive text and URI. Now in the case where it's text, it's up to me to make sure that this text can be converted into a URI. So I'm going to try, catch the exception. If there is an exception, I'm going to show a message to the user and say, sorry, but I need a URI. What you copied here is just gibberish. I don't know what to do with that. Then, into app.xaml.cs, here I modified this code a little bit. So normally this code here, The whole code is inside the unlaunched event. But unlaunched, this is what is called when the application starts totally normally. The user taps on the tile, the application starts. So I'm going to navigate to the main page. Let me do that a little bit bigger. Which is fine. But when I share, when I get some shared content, I implement here on share target activated. And then I'm going to navigate to the share page, which is a different page. And I'm going to pass the share operation as argument. This is where you have all the content. Why do I navigate to a different page? Why don't I go to the main page? Well, mostly it's because, as you saw, the layout is different. It's opening in a flyout automatically. So I have less width, right? So I want to do the layout a little bit differently. And also, very often in the share page, you do something else than on the main page. So personally, I like to have a separate page for that. In the page, you can here in unnavigated to, you can retrieve the share operation. And then I'm going to check it out. So what I do here is I start a task. So I start a background thread, effectively. Why do I do that? Well, it's because there is an animation running. And if you decode the stream, if you decode what you get from the share operation while the animation is running, it's going to be a little bit choppy. You don't want that. You want to be fast and fluid. So just start a quick thread. Then the application is going to show. The splash screen is showing. I want the splash screen to be as short as possible and then see the main page. So this is also why I have this thread here. And then I'm going to decode. So if I have a URI, I'm going to get it with get URI async. If I have text, I'm going to get it. I may have an error. In that case, I show a dialog. And then I'm going to set whatever I got from the application into a text box. So here I need to dispatch that back to the main thread because I was on the background thread. Okay? Sounds complicated. It's not really that complicated. Now, the cool thing is that you can debug that, which is really nice. But to debug, if you press F5, your application is going to start. And then you cannot really share, right? So there is a trick. If you go to the project properties, okay, and you go to debug, you can select here, do not launch, but debug my code when it starts. So now if I press F5, the application builds, installs, it's ready to launch, but it's not launched yet. And now I can go, for example, Internet Explorer is going to launch wrongly. Let me just change that setting quickly. Programs. Here we go. Okay. So now, Internet... No. Okay, so I'm going to... I'm going to force it to run... I'm not a huge fan of the Windows RT, Windows Explorer, so... Here we go. I think that should do it. Okay, so now I have Windows Explorer in full screen. If I go to a page which is, I don't know, which has some interesting, like for example, well, okay, the URI is not super big, but still, now I can go to share, and you see, those are the applications which can receive URI right now on my system. The first one is my share contract demo. If I tap, then it's going to start, and if I had a breakpoint in my code, the breakpoint would hit, and then I could debug whatever I get from the system. If I have some text which is selected, then what I'm going to share is text. And now you see the list is different. I only have mail and the share contract demo. And this time, well, it's not a URI, but in that case, I accept it because it's just a quick demo. I don't show you an error message to the user. Okay? So that is sharing, and it's really a good idea to do that into your apps. Cool. So now if you look for inspiration for your apps, there is actually a pretty cool page made by Microsoft. and this is here. So you have the URL at the bottom. Again, you are going to get the slide, so you'll have all this information. And here you have a lot of different ideas of design, of templates, of whatever you want to do for different types of application. Observe that space carefully, because I know that Microsoft is doing a lot of work. They are really creating sample apps, sample project templates, a lot of ideas to try to motivate people to get out of, you know, the grid, get out of two lines of tiles, you know, boring colors, etc. So they try to really motivate you to be a little bit more innovative in design. And that's a good space to look for ideas. Here, that's a start, but I know that more content will come soon. Okay, that's all I have for now. So I hope it was informative. If you have questions, I'm happy to take them. And look for the content that I just showed on my blog, the first blog.galasov.ch. I will publish that probably over the weekend. Thank you very much for your attention, and drive safe to go back home, and have fun coding and designing. Thank you.